Remember, you can stay up to date on the latest news with the Irish Independent WhatsApp channel.
On the latest episode of Real Health with me, Carl Henry, I'm delighted to be joined by trichologist Claire Fulham, chatting all things hair loss.
I remember then going, I'm losing a bit more hair. Like, I could see hair everywhere. It was all over my desk and work everywhere. And so I went to my GP. She found five big patches on my scalp, one the size of my fist. So I was like, right, what am I going to do about this? Give me a plan. She just looked me dead in the eye and said, there's nothing you can do. I went on list for dermatologists. She had a cancellation and she very quickly said, yes, you have alopecia areata.
As ever, available on all podcast platforms.
Seachtain, an Indo Askeliga.
Lower and once you're in a Elner Donaldson Lish and Ifigoxin, I can hear Lower Jeffrey the Dinnerby.
Ni Heg will in policy Seachtain, Ian Vodayanu and Avira Listad occur Lishna Bodge Fogashoot.
Skilty, Fis, Turmi.
Ni Mujigiri in Dram Honyal Ama, Ta Mujigiri Mujhain Honyal Ista.
Seachtain, find us on all the usual podcast platforms.
This is an Irish Independent podcast.
The Champions Cup round of 16 provided plenty of drama and excitement, and at the end of it all, we are left with a blockbuster quarter-final to look forward to this weekend. Leinster host La Rochelle once again at the Aviva Stadium, but unfortunately Munster will not be joining them in the last eight as they were defeated by Northampton at Franklin's Gardens. However, Connacht and Ulster had a positive weekend as they qualified for the European Challenge Cup quarterfinal, so we have plenty to look forward to this coming weekend and plenty to discuss on the latest episode of the Left Wing Podcast. Will Slattery here with you, and I'm delighted to be joined in studio by Luke Fitzgerald and Keane Tracy. And lads, plenty to look forward to this weekend. We were discussing off air the Leinster La Rochelle game. But first, let's just have a recap and go through some of the talking points from the weekend that's gone. We'll start with Munster, and then we can have a clear runway towards the weekend after that. 24-14 to Northampton. Obviously, you could tell after the game there was a serious bug going around in the squad that definitely hampered them somewhat. But fifth year in a row, they won't make it into the semi-finals of Europe. They'll be very disappointed with that. Where do you think the game got away from them? Because there was periods, certainly in the first half, when they appeared to be on top. Probably didn't press home that advantage quite enough, given they were always going to be maybe lacking a bit in the second half with those energy levels, probably not where they wanted to be.
Yeah, look, I think for any conversation around Munster at the moment, and you have caveated already, Will, by mentioning the bug and the injuries that they've had, it's been the story of their season, really, hasn't it? Like, such a costly injury list, and it finally came back to bite them. I suppose the reality is that they've only won one game in the Champions Cup this season, albeit it was a brilliant win away to Toulon. But, I mean, drawn at home to a second-string Bayonne team, thrown away Leeds against Northampton and over in Exeter, the writing probably was on the wall a little bit, and that's the level they're at. For the second season in a row, they get knocked out in the round of 16, but I thought, like, they played really well in that first half. But in a way, I thought, like, the opening 5 minutes probably summed up the game for me. Like, Munster were playing all the rugby on top. John Hodnett gets held up over the line, and then Northampton go down the other end of the pitch, and you're kind of going, wow, okay. And I felt like Munster punched themselves out a little bit. The first half was an amazing spectacle to watch. It was a cracking game. But as I was watching it, I was thinking, this is really playing into Northampton's hands, because they have a 6-2 split that they can call on off the bench. Munster's bench did look a little bit callow. You had a guy like Stephen Archer going 80 minutes, and fair play to him for managing it.
Considering the circumstances.
Yeah, exactly. Just so far from ideal. So I thought the kind of helter-skelter nature of the game really played into Northampton's hands. But look, even allowing for the illness and the injuries, I just thought the defence was really, really poor. And I think when they reflect on it, whenever they do, if they probably had a couple of days off with Dennis Leamy, I think they'll be seriously annoyed by how easy. Look, the Northampton attack is amazing, you'd have to say. Sam Vesey is doing a superb job. They're top of the Premiership for a reason. But how easily they were allowed to cut through the Munster defence four times was really, really disappointing. And I think that's what will frustrate them most. I think they'll, in fairness to Graham Rowntree, he didn't look to use the injuries or the illness, same with Tadhg Byrne, as an excuse after the match. And that's fair enough. You'd expect nothing less from a Munster head coach and a Munster captain. But I think their defensive standards have just, they've got a, no doubt that they demand higher of themselves. But to concede the first two tries, I was thinking it was so soft. And then when George George Hendy comes off the bench and they run that. Look, it's a class move from deep in their own 22, but you can't concede a try from that deep at this level. So it was a bit of a reality check, maybe, Will, for them. You know, winning the URC was amazing last season, but you hear of the amount of players that are going to be leaving at the end of the season, and yeah, it could be a tough road back to get back to where Munster, I think, feel like they belong, and they certainly do belong in terms of challenging from the Champions Cup, but they're a bit off that, I think.
Yeah, you touched on it there. The damage was done in terms of their overall aspirations of winning the tournament with their pool stage. Like, they had done the hard work in terms of getting that top seeding by winning the URC. Like, I think Leinster have won 23 pool matches in a row. Like, the top teams who go deep in this tournament are ruthless in the pool stages when they get good draws. Munster squandered 3 double-digit leads and didn't win any of those 3 games you mentioned. Like, they should have been playing at Thomond Park, really, at the weekend, given the draw they got, and even how those games played out. So that was a missed opportunity. But, you know, Graham Rowntree said afterwards, we gave them a lot of presence, I think he described them. Like, the try just before half-time, you know, defence was all over the place. After Munster get 14-7 ahead, a kind of a fairly simple backline move cuts them straight open. Even that first try, like, Jack Crowley made an absolute hames of that kick over the top, gave them a 5-metre line, and Northampton score right after it. And then the defence for the Hendy try at the very end was poor, and then the move at the end. Like, every try was a bit of a gift in its own way.
There's nothing left for me to talk about, Will.
Sorry.
you know how I feel.
I do. Yeah, so you probably took a bit of my rant away, but I thought the defence, I'm glad you mentioned it. I wasn't sure you were going to mention it, but it was fairly obvious. I thought the defence was just not good enough, you know. I think, like, even the set phase try from the line out, like, Crowley does not need to commit to that first hit. So once he commits to the first hit, then I think Nankivell hits down in the second, and I think then it's kind of all over then, you know, at that point, and Zeebo's left in kind of no man's land. And that is poor, but he looked bare, so bare on his inside from a line out. Like, you know, and it was just a lot of kind of bad stuff, a lot of one-off kind of missed tackles, like the Crowley one for the try that kills off the game. Like, that's just not good enough, you know, because Zeebo has gotten off perfectly in his inside. So the tackle, but you have to know where your missed tackles are. And that, you never, ever miss that one on the outside. If you're the last defender, and particularly if you've got someone, if you've lost your inside defender, so say the inside defender goes to hit the second last guy who's throwing a pass, and you're in a one-on-one situation, then it's your touchline. But if you have Zeebo on your inside, you always push him on the inside. The only tackle you can't miss that the team can't recover from is the one on your outside. So it's a poor one. He goes off his feet too early as well. You know, I think they'll be disappointed with that, because now I don't hear many people moaning about that technique, but if you're not a big guy, and he's actually a really good tackler too, so I think he'd be disappointed in that front. You could see him he was gutted he missed it, and he's too good a player to miss them, I think. But going off your feet against good athletes, you know, it's your body weight on their body weight. You're probably sick of me saying this for 6-7 years, but I haven't heard any person say, when someone goes low, it's like, oh, you know, he went low. No, if you go low too early and you're off your feet, it's mistimed, it's poor technique. And I don't hear enough people talking about that, actually. But yeah, I think throughout the game, like, O'Brien's defence was pretty awful, I thought. Now, some of the defence on the inside wasn't great, but they got opened up far too easily. And that was really the tail of the tape for me. Like, I wouldn't have even got too jazzy about the rest of the game. I actually thought they played well. I did think they, you know, there were periods where you felt, oh, just be a little bit more patient. You've got them on the rack here. And in fairness, they'd gone through a good few phases at that point, but there was a few more in them. I felt they would have broken Northampton a little bit, and they weren't able to do that. But the tail of the tape was certainly the defence for me. One-off missed tackles at big moments really let the team down, and I actually thought they'd put themselves in a decent position to go and win that game. And we thought, like, look, despite all the furore during the week about, you know, sicknesses and all this kind of stuff and injuries, like, there was still that team still had enough to win that game. I think I don't rate Northampton that highly. I think they're good, improved, they're top of the Prem, but I just don't rate the Prem that highly. And I just think those two games, Munster could have won them, but for some pretty, pretty poor defence. So, yeah, no, it was disappointing for them. It's a tough season. The one thing I would say is it might be the best thing for them. I think if they can kind of recoup, and if they can make a bit of a run in the league, that's probably where the team is at the moment. I do agree, and we'll probably go down, I don't know if we'll talk about it today, but where the squad goes, it's a little bit worrying to see some of the names that might not be around or are certainly coming to the end, and then people who are leaving who are kind of at the peak, like Frisch should be a very worrying one for me. He's been a good signing for them, so we wait and see on that. That's all up for debate, I assume, or still in train. But the for, you know, in terms of the weekend, the defence has got to be better.
Yeah, in terms of like it being not a good thing for them, but like I don't think they were beating the Bulls in Pretoria. Like, so I feel like this is a way at least they can focus. Like, I think the damage was done. They weren't winning the tournament, I think, based on their pool results. Mm-hmm. So I think to be able to at least throw all their attention and energy, have a week to regroup before going on that two-match stand in South Africa. It would have been Bulls, back-to-back in Pretoria if they had won this game.
Yeah, like last season when they were the Sharks.
Yeah, it was Sharks, wasn't it? Sharks, Stormers. Yeah, so they may be making a bit of a habit of it. But yeah, what do you make of Bernard Jackman referred to it in the build-up to the game, about the mood around Munster, saying, oh, I'm hearing from players there, it's not a happy camp. And I think some people were surprised, obviously, having won the league last year. Now, obviously, it's been a bit of a weird season with a load of injuries. You know, Orji Snyman moving to Leinster, and now the Frisch stuff. There's been kind of stuff like that, but still, like, and the O'Mahony stuff, I suppose, going on in the background too. Like, what's your read on that, or what do you make of it?
In fairness to Bernard Jackman, he's usually on the ball with everything, so I'm certainly not going to doubt his sources. It's not something that I've heard prominently. Look, there's been whispers, different little things throughout the season that maybe they're possibly overtraining. I think you heard this as well and possibly said it on the podcast, correct me if I'm wrong, that they were overtraining maybe a little bit in parts. And look, that possibly feeds into the injury stuff that they're suffering, so that might be something they look at, I think, in pre-season, that can they adjust a few things they're doing there. But maybe, look, the Peter O'Mahony thing has been a real mess from what you hear behind the scenes, and that's probably, I would imagine, clouding lots of the stuff. I think Peter O'Mahony is so highly respected in both dressing rooms, in the Ireland dressing room and the Munster dressing room, that if he felt he was being harshly treated, which it seems like he has been, well, certainly in his eyes, in terms of how those negotiations have gone, you can speak.
I'd say unsettling, Cian. Would you?
That's what I mean. Like, that's what I was going to say. Like,
It's April.
And he's so well respected, and you can obviously speak way better about this, of what a mood in a dressing room would be like. But if you saw your captain and your main leader being treated like this, possibly it could create a bit of disharmony. There's guys being let go at the end of the season when their contracts are up. Naturally, they're going to be, you'd imagine, disappointed or frustrated. But I haven't heard that there's like a coup going on or anything in Munster by any means. And obviously, the results not going their way, like the weekend, will feed into any sort of negative narrative. But they do have a good chance, if they can get some players back, to, I suppose, to have a good run at defending the URC. And I think, you know, to go back to the game at the weekend, I felt like they actually needed a bit of old Munster in a way. Like, they've committed so well and it's worked so well in terms of playing this more open style of play, but they actually needed to go back to a little bit of playing the territory, playing the corners like that, which is easier said than done when you don't have the pack. And that's a big issue. They're seriously lacking in the front row. I think they're lacking pace. I was talking to
James Cronin on the weekend.
I mean, we've certainly spoken about that on this podcast before. Like, that was a mistake that Munster let him go. As he's making that breakthrough, you're kind of going
the offload as well. I was like, Jesus.
It was brilliant. But yeah. I was texting a mate during the match, and we were both saying like the lack of pace in that Munster backline is alarming, I would say. And even when you allow for, they were missing obviously Calvin Nash and Shane Daly, but they're not top end speed.
Nash is pretty quick.
He's quick, but I don't think you wouldn't say he's like one of the fastest players in the country by any means. So I wouldn't put him up there like with a James Gibson Park, a Hugo Keenan, and guys like that.
He's quicker than Gibson Park.
Gibson Park's rapid.
He is quick, but not as rapid. Quick as
anyway, I'm getting sidetracked.
Yeah. I'm sidetracking.
They're 40 times out. You know?
But I think they're lacking pace, really, and that is a big issue when you come up against teams like Northampton, who were missing George Furbank as well. Yeah. But how easily they were able to cut them open with pace. And I thought, yeah, they just got shown up. They looked leggy. They looked a little bit aging, I thought, and that's an issue, because you look at who's coming in next season. At the moment, the backs are Billy Burns, who's like obviously not blessed with top end speed, and Dermot Kilgallen is coming in from Connacht too. Looks like he'll be a really good signing, but they're not the kind of signings that are going to help.
Frisch
you
is gone,
and
well,
Frisch is gone.
Is that confirmed?
Well, it seems.
It looks like almost certainly it will happen. Like France
from Roundtree's post match comments, it looked like it's negotiations at the moment with maybe one of the big French.
And it'll be very
I think that was as far down the line.
That is
given that interview to L'Equipe a few days before the game, saying I'm a Frenchman, I want to play for France, which is his right, like, but it obviously shows. It was a come and get me
speaking of disharmony in the dressing room. I wouldn't be surprised if that didn't go down well at all, to give an interview like that. Now obviously from a media point of view it's great, like, and we shouldn't be complaining about guys being honest, but that
French left wing wherever you
a good idea at all, I don't think, to give that. So it'll be interesting. Munster are probably going to have to go back into the market to try and get a centre. It'll be interesting to see actually if they look at someone like Dan Kelly, who played for Leinster at the weekend, who's going to become Irish qualified. Again, he could be a nice little option for them. But again, I don't know if these type of signings are going to help them bridge the obvious gap. I think the front row, even after bringing in Ollie Yeager, I think that needs more attention as well. So it's a long road back, I would say.
Dan Kelly's actually a good shout, because he said he got one cap, I think, and kind of disappeared, and he's behind a good few centres there. So could be a good shout. And Frisch also dropped like a walk-in try as well. When you give that interview, I feel like you have to take that back.
It could be a different game if he scores that try.
Was it 14-7 then?
Possibly 47 or 14-all, one or the other. But it was a great little pass by Zeebo. He scores that, it could be a different game. And he didn't have a good game, by the way, Antoine Frisch.
He threw a bad offload into the touch.
Yeah, his defence. He was partly, I would say, to blame for some of the defences.
Certainly not to Seth Faze. Like, he does lose his inside man, but at the same time, you've got to try. You can't just bite down knowing that the ball's going to go. If the guy has too much time, you've got to try and sit back, use your footwork, and just wait it out a little bit. Because what it does is it buys other people in the team time. You know what I mean? You know, you're not just doing that for you. And also creates indecision in the attacker's mind. So it was actually poor defence. And I think a lot of people, that's the one thing that's probably that I've noticed in the game that's gotten a little bit worse, that because of everyone is so hard up and in all the time, that when they get put in a situation where they're kind of exposed and they have to wait and they have to try and create a bit of indecision or buy other people around them time to get in position, I think it's becoming a little bit of a lost art with this hard up. Now, of course, that works, and I think that's the future. It's the present and the future, but you still need that skill, that kind of soft defence. You need to be able to do that. He was poor at that. For an outside centre, you need to have a bit of both, I think, to be considered top class, in my opinion, anyway.
Yeah, so Munster regroup, and then off to South Africa to play the Bulls and the Lions, I think, potentially. Don't hold me to that. Anyway, it'll be a tough 2 weeks, but you know they're still in the mix for the URC, and as you say, if they get a few players back, Orgy Snyman would help if he can play a couple of games before he.
But that trip last year was galvanizing for the team and put them in a different place. Now, obviously, they've had all the subsequent kind of injuries and all this kind of stuff going on in the background, retirements, all this stuff. But look, they have to view it as that. I think they still have a few bodies to come back in, hopefully in the kind of shorter term, that could help them out. And it's not that they're not a million miles off. They haven't been a million miles off all season, despite all the setbacks. So if they can figure out where they need to fix, and I feel like that the obvious one is the defence, I think they're right in the games, and then once you're in the mix, you're in the mix. The front row stuff is a bit concerning, and that probably will be shown up. That's the one thing about a South Africa trip, is that that'll probably get shown up. But we wait and see. I'm not losing hope. I haven't lost hope completely for them. I still feel like there's enough quality, as I said, but this season it's not looking great at this time. You know, they nearly want the thing to be over and to get into pre-season and get planning to get a few.
We're probably saying the same things last season, this time last season. That's the
irony.
And then they went
with the South Africa game,
they got hockeyed in the round of 16 games against
Sharks.
It was looking doom and gloom, and then they ended up turning it around. So I agree with you. I mean, the season isn't lost by any means, but it's a huge couple of weeks that they're coming up in South Africa.
Yeah, one Munster man who was happy after the weekend, Ronan O'Gara, back in his home place now with all the La Rochelle players. I think a lot of people have enjoyed that whole kind of thing so far this week. It's hilarious how it came down to like this, exactly like the pool game, try in the corner, Lebok standing over a conversion, identical almost. This time he misses it, sets up Leinster La Rochelle. It's funny, obviously, like last week, we touched on the possibility of Leinster La Rochelle, but now that it's come concrete, it just it feels like the iceberg in Titanic, you know, looming towards.
Take it easy, Will. I can see you're getting a bit overexcited for my liking there.
It's said to be a great game, but like, well, what's your kind of, what are your initial thoughts of it? It's funny, you were saying, everyone seems to be saying Leinster this time. I'm like, everyone I'm talking to is going towards La Rochelle. Like, so what's
Yeah, I've heard a few people tipping Leinster, which I've been surprised with, I have to say. But I'm all agreeing with you in terms of the enthusiasm. As I was watching the game before I went to the Viva last week, and look, no offence to South African listeners or the Stormers listeners, but when Manny Lebok missed the conversion, like, I mean, I think most people would have been happy unless you were South African or Stormers, because this is the game that everyone wanted to see. And obviously Leinster then held up their side of the bargain later on, and it feels like a different sort of dynamic going into this weekend, in that I don't think Leinster or La Rochelle have been really near anywhere near their best. Maybe that's a good thing that they're both saving their best for this weekend. And I think whoever wins will need to be at their best to beat each other. So, look, it couldn't be better set up, really. Rog bringing the lads to Cork is amazing. Like, I've been writing about it yesterday. He tweeted the picture of on a wet runway in Home Sweet Home. And then you had Ulton Delan playing the fields of Athenry on the team bus as they're making their way to Photo Island. So it makes sense from a logistical point of view, because they've done obviously the bulk of their travelling apart from going up to Dublin later in the week, obviously coming back from South Africa. But I don't know, and we were talking about this, Will, it feels like kind of behind enemy lines or something. And Ronan O'Gara, like, one of the biggest things that he learned during his time at the Crusaders was the idea of teaming and stuff like that, is in creating a team for the week and getting your players to buy into it. And he gave a fascinating insight after the Champions Cup final last year, if you remember, about how it was, you know, trying to scale their Everest and tapping into different family values and stuff. And I think that kind of stuff is really interesting, and I love when he gives you a peek behind the curtain. But I'd be surprised if going to Cork and spending the week down in Leaside isn't some team that they're kind of trying to work their way in.
It seems simple on paper.
It all the time. Yeah. Check really, that every year. Yeah, hit a team. Yeah, it's really good.
It's fascinating stuff. And yeah, it couldn't be better scripted. Even the fact that Leinster got the win earlier this season
creates the doubt. I think everyone would tip La Rochelle, even if they weren't playing great, if Leinster hadn't won that pool game away in wet conditions, which everyone was like, this will really suit La Rochelle, 100%. These conditions. I remember thinking, this is not good that it's wet.
Do you think that has a big bearing on this weekend?
No, I don't. I just think that in everyone's mind now, there's a little bit of uncertainty.
And there will be La Rochelle.
Leinster are at home, you know what I mean? Yeah. So I think, yeah, exactly. La Rochelle wouldn't be as sure, I think, if that hadn't happened. So I think that does create a little bit of a different dynamic, Will. I don't think it matters now. We're too far beyond it now at this stage.
The performance against Leicester, I think, you know, considering how the game went last year, and then you see the Leicester team sheet, they're missing Ollie Chesham, they're missing George Martin, they're missing Tommy Raphael. You're thinking, God, that's three of their best players out of the pack. This should be a pretty straightforward win for Leinster. Not so. That Robbie Hench, our intercept in the second half, kind of put a bit of daylight, but Leicester were coming back into the game. Were you surprised how much trouble Leicester gave Leinster, and what do you think it means heading into this weekend?
Well, I think it means it's kind of confirmed, I think, what we've said about Leinster all season, I think, is that we're a little unsure as to, you know, have they made a jump beyond what they were last season? And, you know, are we really seeing the impact of that? Or, like, have we seen a massive impact from the introduction of a new coaching, the key coaching staff member in Nina Barr? And that's, the jury is still out on that one, I think. You know, I think in attack as well, they've been a little bit muddled, a little bit wasteful as well. You know, that's still happening close to try lines. You know, the Jack Cohn one, it's a lovely bit of defence, in fairness, and very hard to plan for that because it comes back in, you know, from behind you nearly to slap the ball out of your hands. But you still got to finish it, you know. I think a few unanswered questions. They still came out, they still had big moments, and they seemed to be able to do that. I thought Gibson Park, like, Rudds was texting me in the middle of the game. And
texting me as well.
Yeah.
He was sitting next to me.
Yeah, the best in the world. And I was like, let's see him next week was my response. And we'll have a bit more of an understanding of that. But geez, he was so good. Like, when he's playing against a team that can't compete, with the pace, or the struggle with the pace, and they allow Leinster kind of reasonably quick ruck ball, like Gibson Park, he might be one of the best players in the world. Where the jury is out is when Leinster aren't on top against the big teams, maybe, or Ireland aren't on top. Probably I have he's not the best in the world for me in that scenario, I don't think, but certainly an outstanding player, really instinctual, has a nose to be in the right place at the right time, and he's hard to stop when he's like, because the pace of the pass, the decision making, the guys he has around him is a big part of it. I think Ireland is, no, I saw something interesting on Twitter. I think actually it might have been you, Keane, talking about it. He wouldn't have
gone. Oh, it wasn't interesting, so if it was me.
No, it was something about, I don't know, I can't remember who it was now, but they were talking about Gibson Park and saying if he'd stayed in New Zealand, he'd never got capped for New Zealand. Maybe it wasn't you. And and I think that might be right, but I think he probably came into the perfect scenario here. Now, obviously, he's had to work his way into the team, but as the team has evolved, that pack is just magic to play a quick brand of rugby with. There's just so many top of the ground runners, so many guys who can ball play. They understand where the space is. They kind of stand in good positions. Even think of the coming back to Sheehan. Like, you can see the guys have called that one. The other one, he goes to Sheehan, then he gets the ball back inside again down that short side. Like, a forward being able to do that. We had some brilliant players in the pack when I was there, but I just couldn't, I don't see, I think that's the jump that the Leinster team have made in terms of the quality of rugby, is that that 1-8 are really comfortable making those decisions, and they're so, so effective. So yeah, I think he's playing in the perfect place for him, and it really suits his style. And he was so good; his imprint was all over the game. But I look, I still have my reservations about Leinster. I still think they could be better defensively. I think they're, you know, even the line out try at the end, like, it's just a little bit messy, isn't it? You know, so
very messy.
You cannot allow those things against La Rochelle. Like, they will punish you 100% for that. And I just don't feel like, you know, in the big games, I just don't think you'll get as much opportunity off La Rochelle. That's just my gut sense of it. Even if they're not playing well, you know, and they were a little bit patchy, you know, against the Stormers. Now, they were down to 14 men, I suppose, but the Crossfield kick at the end was too easy a walk-in to have that. You know, that wasn't even close. No one even competed for that Crossfield kick. So they're not what they were, I don't think, but they're still a classy outfit. And I think in a big game, when they're really clued in against Leinster, which they will be, I just don't think it won't be all easy for Leinster. And then I'm wondering, you know, can their line out hold up? Can their scrum hold up against a better outfit? You know, are they better defensively? And I felt like they need, I think James Ryan is a huge, huge loss to this team defensively. He was the key guy, I thought. A lot, John McCarthy coming in was a big help, but he was the key guy against La Rochelle over there this year. He was the key guy in the final last year. And when he went off, the game completely turned. So not having him, I think, you know, that is a big problem for them. So that might be the key factor in this for me.
Yeah, I was actually going to make so many similar points to what you made. I have to say, I'm not convinced at all that Leinster are in a better place to go and win a Champions Cup this season compared to last season. I was going to make the same point about James Ryan. I thought you really saw in the game at the weekend how much he was missed. Look, you've a guy like Ross Maloney, he's been an unbelievable servant. He went 80 minutes and he runs the line out when James Ryan isn't there. And you've a guy like Jason Jenkins on the bench who hasn't probably brought the impact that Leinster were hoping for. So that's a big decision that Leinster, or Leo Cullen, is going to have to make this week. But I think Ross Maloney's line at acumen is so important that he has to play, but he doesn't quite give you the power, the ballast that Leinster needs. So that, is, to me, is a big issue going into this La Rochelle game. I think Gary Ringrose is going to be a big loss as well. I've liked what Jamie Osborne has done. I think he's a fabulous prospect, but I think up against Daunty and Satini, I think you want Henshaw and Ringrose there. And by all accounts, Ringrose isn't going to be fit for this weekend, so it will be Henshaw and Osborne again. You could even see it for the last two games against the Bulls and against Leicester. They swap in and out in terms of where they defend and where they attack. So I think 10 is an issue as well. And I think that's partly why Leinster's attack has been so clunky or stodgy, whatever word you want to use. I think they've become even more reliant on Gibson Park now because so much of it goes through him now as opposed to going through Johnny Sexton at 10. I don't think Ross Byrne has come back from his injury and found that kind of form that you need. So
and the chopping and changing.
The chopping and changing between the 10 and 12 and 13. Like, they don't really have, I would say, enough fluidity there compared to this La Rochelle team, who are just such a well-oiled machine. I've been writing a piece about this. Like, they've won their last 10 knockout games in the Champions Cup. They're going for 11 at the weekend. Over the last two seasons, there's been 23 away games in the knockout stages. There's only been two away wins. La Rochelle in Dublin last year when they came from 17-0 down, and last weekend in Cape Town when they came from 16-0 down. They're the definition, I think, of the, remember Jurgen Klopp a few years ago dubbed Liverpool the mentality monsters. I think La Rochelle are the definition of that in terms of club team. The Springboks have nailed it on the test stage. They haven't lost a knockout game since the 2015 World Cup semi-final. And that's, to me, what makes this really interesting, is how will Nian Arbour, what kind of an effect would he have? Obviously, he's got a huge role in terms of the defensive side of things, but what's he going to do off the pitch in terms of, you know, instilling that kind of ruthless mindset? Because these are the weeks that he was brought in for, and this is the team that he was brought in to kind of make the difference. So that, to me, is a fascinating subplot as well.
Just to look at it from the La Rochelle point of view, because I agree with both of you on Leinster, and I don't think they're better than they were last year, but I do also think that La Rochelle, like, they were fortunate to get over the line at the weekend. I thought they were very poor when they were 16-0 down. Like, ultimately, Lebok missed a conversion. It's not as if La Rochelle won the game like they did against Leinster coming back. Like, Stormers actually won that game and then missed the kick.
I was miles out now. Yeah.
No, I know, but my point is that, like, they were kind of fortunate to get over the line there. Like, La Rochelle will have to deliver like a 9.5 out of 10 to beat Leinster the last 2 years, and up to this point in the season they've played 25 matches, won 13, lost 12. So like their form has been pretty middling.
But
like,
they're a knockout team.
Would you say they produced a 9.5 out of 10 last year, or they produced a nine?
Not in the first 20 minutes.
I was going to say they produced a 9.5 out of 10 for 60 minutes against Leinster. But I think the key thing for me with La Rochelle, which is the challenge for Ireland, the challenge for Leinster, is what they have to produce is not as complex as what Leinster have to produce. It's not as difficult to produce a big scrummaging performance or a big line-up performance or a big physical performance as it is to produce the magic, which Leinster will have to do. They'll have to come up with some brilliant tries to open them up at pace, things working in sync, guys delivering nice passes on the line to break down these big guys. It's why South Africa are so effective in Cup Rugby as well. It's their things they have to produce are not as difficult. I don't think they've got a big advantage size-wise. They've got a strong kicking game and they're tactically very astute. I think they don't really try and go too far beyond those things. And that poses a big problem. It means you've got a Leinster, to my mind, have to produce the 9.5 out of 10 for the whole game. Whereas I think La Rochelle probably don't have to do that. And they can kind of break you down with kind of big, big phases of play. Like, and you know, like any time it goes beyond, it goes into kind of deep into phase play, they just look like they can keep going. Like that weight really tells. And then at different points in the game, towards the end of each half, you just always feel like, when you get to set piece time, you're just worried. Like I was really worried. What I didn't like about Leinster in the weekend was that Maul try that they conceded against that Leicester pack. It was way too easy. The body height of everyone, you could even see it. You know, once it got down, you're going, oh, Leinster too high here. You could see it. I think it might have been Sheehan was, I think Sheehan was actually in there and looked like he was, and there was someone in, maybe he was pushing him behind someone. But I remember just thinking, and it was the bit you could see on the cameras. It was the right hand side of it, you know what I mean, of the Maul. I was thinking, wow, like this is kind of a key part of the game, like portion of the game. You're trying to kind of kill them off here. And I just thought, like that's a bit of a worrying sign.
La Rochelle are licking their lips at that, aren't
they? They're 100% of the time they're going over if you're in that position against them. Now, Leinster will be better. They'll be more concerned about La Rochelle. They'll be more on it. They'll know that they have the issue, the weight to deal with. And also, I think the one thing you will get this year with Leinster, despite all the chopping and changing, is he will change. And he will change them on 50 minutes. I don't think he won't do a Farrell in the Six Nations and miss the window to change people.
Well, his use of the bench has been very poor in the other finals.
Ninabar.
Oh, Leo Cullen. Well, sorry.
Ninabar as well.
Well, if Ninabar is the one pulling
he will make the changes, I think. And like if they go to a 6-2 split, which I think they really should do against La Rochelle, they need to take the risk here, I think. I think you just have to do it. You can't let them just bruise their way all the way through. You've got to have something coming off the bench and you've got to have options as well. And you've guys there who are actually playing reasonably well as well, like your Conan's and these guys. So,
who would your 6-4 be? Will Connors, maybe?
Sorry, 6-2.
Yeah, who would be?
Yeah, it would be Will. Will was good over there.
Outstanding.
He was really good over there.
It's actually been surprising that he hasn't kicked on since that performance.
You're obviously not seeing what they want to see out of him, but he is good in these games. Yeah. He's got that chop tackle technique down. He does it. He's really good technique there, and he's good. He's a fetcher too.
Yeah.
And
I
he's decent in the open.
Him.
Yeah. He's not the same player he was before all the injuries. Mm-hmm. He needs a good run, and he's not going to get it in Leinster, unfortunately. There's just too much quality in front of him. But he's a guy who can make an impact. He has big belief in himself as well. So he would be my six, and I think that, or so my sixth forward.
Yeah,
I just think that you have, you know, you need to have people who have belief coming off, because you're going to need that, and you need to believe in them as well. And I think Ninabar will do that. If you're on the bench, you're coming on for Ninabar, I think. So I think that might be the thing that might help.
What about Jack Conan in from the start? Like, I think he's been the most dynamic forward performer in the last couple of weeks. I actually think Caelan Doris has had a pretty quiet since the French game in Marseille, almost. Like, and is Caelan Doris so good that he should start ahead of Jack Conan, even though Jack Conan is like a three test line and is playing out of his skin? Like, I don't know if Doris should be on the bench necessarily. Maybe you put him at seven. Van der Fleer was on the bench.
He's a bit of a leader, though. Conan actually is definitely a leader. He's a good talker, always was. But Doris seems to me like, I hear lots of people saying he's like the shoe-in for next Ireland captain or something. Like, does that play a factor? I agree with you, sorry. You know, I agree.
Look, not only does it play a factor, he's clearly become one of those players now that is just like in the team.
Yeah, in the team.
Like, it's just like, unless...
If he's fit, he's playing.
If he's fit, he's playing. I'm just asking, like, Van der Fleer was used off the bench in December and played really well when he came on for Will Connors. Like, could you... And Doris has been tried at six. you know, Baird 6, Doris 7, Conan 8 potentially. Is that an option?
I think it's a very good point that you make, because I don't think if Leinster are to beat La Rochelle at the weekend, look, I'll get it onto your point, like I'm going to take it as a given that Caelan Doris is going to start. They need him to be 8, 9 out of 10.
He
hasn't had that. And it's been really frustrating, because he is an exceptional, exceptional player. And he just hasn't hit the heights. Even going back to that World Cup quarter final, he got outplayed by Ardie Cervea, who was freakishly good that day. But you need him to be at his best in these big games. And Leinster are going to need that. I think
Bodia has dominated the back row. And fairness.
And Aldridge's back as well.
Like those two have dominated these exchanges in the big games over the last couple of years, I think, and they need to be, you need to get on top of them. You know, you've enough trouble with Antonio and Skelton without having those two guys on top of you as well. Like, Leinster need to be on top of them there, I think, and they need to be aggressive at the bench to do that, I think.
Yeah, I think Josh van der Fleer is going to start, and we'll have a piece up on the website and in the Irish Independent as well. So that, like, Leinster don't usually put subs up for media. That to me would suggest Josh van der Fleer is starting, so that would leave Conan coming in for maybe Ryan Baird, who had a few errors, I thought, at the weekend. Played well, and he had that, you know, a couple of trademark breaks which you associate with him, but possibly there's an argument for Conan
Baird to second row.
You could do that, but my
Aaron McCarthy and then a back row.
But who? Yeah, that is Leo Cullen's kind of bread and butter is his line out, and I think he'd be very reluctant to go with someone who isn't really comfortable in calling the line out. That's the point I was making about Jason Jenkins or Ross Maloney. I just think Ross Maloney, because he's such an important line out leader, and again, this comes back to how much Leinster are going to miss James Ryan, both for running the set piece and everything else that he gives you around the pitch. So that is a bit of a sticky dilemma. But I like, could Conan come in instead of Ryan Baird, and could you have Doris at six or Conan at six, possibly with Ryan Baird off the bench?
Whoever's on that bench is a massive part to play,
and they're going
to
know that.
I think Nina Barr, this is where his man management skills will really come in, because that those guys need to fire off that bench like their lives depend on it, because the team's life depends on it. And I think that's going to be the key. Those conversations that he has this week are going to be vital. They're going to be absolutely vital, because think about when these games have been won. You know, even when the games have kind of been more in the balance for longer. Obviously, last year Leinster got off to a complete flyer, but it's always the last couple of minutes that kind of separate these two teams. And yeah, I don't know. I think that's going to be the key one for him. Can he? That'll be another part that we won't see. It's a complete intangible for us on the outside. But can he have those conversations that he seems to be able to have had?
That's where I think
with the South African team.
That's where I think the difference could be. Like, it's something that we can't really discuss in detail because we don't know what's being said. But from everything I've heard from the South African players talk, it's the intangibles. It's the man management. It's how he prepares them mentally. And from what I've seen from the outside looking in, Leinster could do with that bit of mental prep, you know, as in we have Gary Keegan in Irish camp. Like,
they have Declan Darcy in Leinster, yeah. You know, and this is why they brought Jack Nienaber in. They brought him in obviously to run the defence, but also to find that little bit extra. And look, I spoke to loads of Munster players, and I know he wasn't there that long, but the impact that he had in such a short period of time, apparently his meetings are incredibly detailed, but also I think he does this thing where he kind of has like hit of the week or defender of the week, and every single player, because he makes such a big deal of it, wants to be up on that board come the Monday morning when they're doing the review. And you've seen the clips from, or seen the episodes even, of the Chasing the Sun, and you see, you know, Rassie Erasmus absolutely laying into the players, you know, the South African players. Shaq Nienaber has been known to do plenty of that as well. And I think, because what is he here now? He's here since December.
It's been over
14 weeks, exactly. But he's like, look, he would have commanded the respect of the Leinster dressing room the second he walked in it, no doubt about it. But I feel like he's a few months on now into it, so he probably has that little bit more scope to maybe give a little bit more to the players, you know, that kind of, you know, that ruthless mindset, that kick up the ass that maybe some guys might need going into this game. And that could be what the difference is. And, you know, you speak about the intangibles, the amount of hurt that's in this Leinster dressing room that's been caused by La Rochelle is going to be a massive, massive driving factor. But you look on the flip side, La Rochelle are obviously trying to emulate Toulon in terms of winning three titles in a row. So there's just so many aspects you can come at this game, and I think this is why we all just can't wait.
I think it's the greatest European rivalry in the history of the competition.
I think the person who I read something else on Twitter, and it was a really good point. Leinster have to win one of the big ones for it to be considered a rivalry.
Yeah.
And I think that is, yeah, like, that is really important. Mm. This weekend is huge for Leinster. And I think...
It's legacies on the line kind of thing.
It is 100%. And I think as well, the issue for them, the sad thing for them, it's... Legacies are on the line, but they still have to go and win the competition after. Yeah, it's only quarter final. But I do think that it's going to be seriously, seriously important for them that they don't overhype it like they did last year. They punched themselves out after 25 minutes.
I think we're past that, aren't we? It's mad, like it's so hyped. I don't think it could be more.
No, but you just it's the assassin mindset. It's delivering the violence with a calm head, and you've got to be able to do that against La Rochelle. You can't punch yourself out, and I'm hoping that. Like, that's one of those kind of intangible things that I think Nina Barr brings as well, with a tangible element, because I think the bench is key, and I don't think Leinster have been good enough in that area. Kind of picking when to bring those other people on and trusting them to have an impact on the game or see them out if they're in a good position. So, I can't wait for it. I think everyone can't wait for it. I'm really delighted that La Rochelle got through, because I think for the competition, it's big. And I think Leinster need the test. I do think they need this. They need to win this game. And that's maybe the one area where I think that's what brings this close to me, because I think La Rochelle have a bit of a nose ahead in this one for me. But what makes it kind of intriguing is that I think Leinster need this more than La Rochelle. Mm. Leinster need it badly.
That assassin's mindset is a really interesting point, because, like I mentioned, we were chatting to Josh van der Fleer on Monday, and you know, he's one of the kind of the calmest guys that you could ever speak
friendly
to.
Assassin,
yeah, but he was making the point that, kind of touching on a little bit of what you're talking about there, Luke, that you know, some guys need to be hopping off the walls, and again, you'll know more about this when they're in the dressing room before the match, but that he much prefers the kind of the calmer approach, and it is about, isn't it, getting that,
it conserves your energy right for the right moments, because it's still a game of, like, it's not like running a marathon, you know, like it's not like non-stop all the way, you know, like in a way where, you know, for the whole thing, it's much more kind of big moments. But if you're hyped all the way through, it just saps the energy. And I really felt like that was what happened, like, because there was a really soft try conceded just before halftime, and I just felt like, oh, they felt like they were exhausted from having, like, just exerted themselves so hard at the start of the game, and I think that they need to watch that. They need to be mindful of that, be cautious. They need to have that big breath that you see them do. They need to do that a bit more often, I think, in this one. It's a weird thing to say, because you feel like Leinster need to speed this game up against La Rochelle, but I actually don't think that has really helped them. I think they need to be just plugging, like, when, you know, they need to pick their moments maybe a little bit more, and I think need to be a bit wiser and a bit smarter through kind of the longer passages of the game about how they manage it, whether they take an extra breath when they're in, you know, down in La Rochelle's territory, you know, whether they're a little bit slower in their own if they have a penalty or something like that. There's all these little areas of the game where I'm hoping that they just manage themselves and manage their energy levels really, really well, and I think pick the right plays. I think, you know, there was a period in the game last year where they completely got, like, in the second half, I felt so bad for Ross Byrne. Like, there was no options for him there. Everyone, they were overcommitting to rooks, all these things. They looked like they were panicking to me, and it just got worse and worse, and they kind of gave themselves no options. It's not what, like, if Leinster are to play well, they're going to need to have options, because if they don't have options in attack against this La Rochelle defence, they won't break it down. It becomes an arm wrestle, you know, and they don't want an arm wrestle with them. That's the one thing they don't want. Now, it doesn't have to be lightning fast like the first 25 minutes for the whole game, but they certainly need to have options all the way through, so that at the very least they get one-on-ones in attack. That's kind of key for this team going forward, because then you can get edges, you can get good rooks, and you don't have to overcommit, and you have options all the way through. So look, I've come through a lot there, and it's kind of hard to explain what's in my mind about it sometimes, because you're kind of picturing the game.
There's so much
to unpack with this game, but that they're important things for Leinster, that they don't, the energy level's really vital against La Rochelle, I think.
Yeah, and the energy level's point, like the second half of all three knockout games, Leinster have been massively outscored in all three. I think it was 8 in the semi-final in 21 by like 9 in the 22 final, and like 10 points last year in the second half. So Leinster have been like blown away in the second half of all three games.
And the set piece has kind of folded, and that's kind of been vital in those second half.
The set piece is going to be vital. Carl Dixon is the referee. That could be an interesting one, particularly if La Rochelle win a scrum penalty from the first scrum. That is going to be really difficult. Like, I mean, we've spoken about the power that they have. They've also got to kick well. This is something that they, like, Ireland didn't do well in Twickenham, which we would have discussed at the time.
The James Lowe option,
look, it's become too predictable, I think, in many ways. So I think they've got to vary it up in terms of Ross Byrne maybe taking a little bit more responsibility. And if they are keeping the ball in play, the kick chase has got to be better as well, because we saw them concede a try against
just
the Bulls.
Just start from 10 metres further back if you go to James Lowe or Ross Byrne. That option to me is dead. Like, that is not, that's not a good option. If you're going to go long, you may as well go off Gibson Park. Like, you know, because your defensive line has to start like behind the kicker. I think it's, unless you're going to touch with it, that option does not make sense, or unless you're going unbelievably long. But if you're throwing it back into the dead ball, like, what's the... I think it's a terrible time.
And the thing is, like, Lowe has a massive boot and it is a huge asset, but I agree, it's got to find the touch to give you the breather, because when you keep it in and he kicks it so far, the kick chase has obviously got to come up further. And we saw England exploit it. The Bulls exploited it brilliantly a couple of weeks ago. So that is going to be a really interesting area as well, because if Leinster don't get that right, I think La Rochelle, we focus a lot on the power, but they do have the runners in the back line to hurt them as well.
Yeah, and obviously Leinster aren't the only team who will be in action. Ulster and Connacht won their Challenge Cup quarterfinals. They were the beneficiaries of, you know, some weakened team selections by the French, Montpellier and Pau. And obviously Paul Willems again getting sent off for Montpellier. They were 10 points up at that stage and they ended up losing by 23. Like, so I saw Stephen Ferris on Premier Sports. It's like, this guy's an idiot. Like, he didn't hold back.
Fez is good at words.
But, like, I know, as I said, they picked weakened teams, but great to see them get good wins as well. I watched the Connacht Pau game. It was great to have some rugby on a Sunday evening. They're throwing it around. It was a good Connacht contingent again. The fields of Athenry is being belted out, it looked like. And I see Connacht are running an option that you can fly with the team. They chartered a flight over to Benetton at the weekend. So they play Benetton. Ulster going to Claremont. But great, you know, we talked, it was a bit doom and gloom last week. Great to get a bit of a shot in the arm, and now all of a sudden they're one game away from a semi-final, and there's a bit of life back in both of their seasons.
And I think it might be like Ulster particularly, like I just think they need something. They need some good news somewhere. Like, look, the expectation levels aren't the same with Connacht, whether that's rightly or wrongly, I'm not sure. You know, but Ulster look like they're kind of, it's kind of catching falling knives at this point, and you just want to have a bit of stability towards the end of this season. Even for their recruitment, I think it'll be important, you know, because they're going to need to find some value somewhere. It was pleasing for them. I thought, I mean, look, I am worried about both clubs. I think I'd love to see them a bit more competitive. I think the summers are going to be really, really key for them. I think the end of the season for me, it's just like, if they can get to a semi-final, just have something that they can sell to people coming in, that this is kind of moving in the right direction, or they've stopped the arrest, arrested the decline. That's kind of the big story with these two clubs, Will. It's not that positive at the moment, isn't it? So it's, pleased for them, but still work to do. I think the Claremont one away might be, it's not the same place it was, but it's still a tricky fixture, isn't it? You know, and I just don't trust I just don't trust Ulster, you know. So we'll see how they go.
They were
don't want to get too far ahead. It's one game, you know.
They're under pressure until that red card as well, but like, I as good as Benetton have been and as much as they've improved, I don't think an Irish team going there would ever be, you know, too fearful, even though Benetton are favourites. So Connacht can definitely win that game. Bundiaki was back. Finlay Beelan was back. They put in a good shift. You know, so
I was just going to make that point. Yeah, like, I mean, when you're bringing back Bundy and Finlay, obviously they're going to make a big difference. And it was interesting how they kind of went about the team selection, because I would have thought on paper at least they would have probably loaded it up for the URC game as opposed to the Challenge Cup game. But look, it obviously worked out well. And look, obviously if you win the Challenge Cup, you'll get qualification for the Champions Cup. Not to get too far ahead of ourselves, but it's not the strongest Challenge Cup pool. And I think I'm right in saying they're on the opposite sides of the draw, aren't they? So you could have Connacht and Ulster in a Challenge Cup final in the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium in next month, which would be amazing. Look, there's a lot of road left to run. Interesting, well, Stephen Kitchoff obviously gone from Ulster, which was, I suppose, another thing thrown into the mix up there. It's just been one thing after another. Not a great look, is it, when your marquee signing is walking in out the door so quickly. So, it's great to see them doing well. I think you're right, Luke. I don't think it's the same Claremont team. I think they'll probably have one eye on the top 14 as well. So it's certainly a winnable game for sure.
And if Ulster win against Claremont, they'll probably be playing the Sharks in semi-final, but the Sharks can't play that at home, so it'll have to be played in the Northern Hemisphere somewhere, so it'll be like a neutral venue. So that would be, you know, that makes...
Right, that's your best case scenario, isn't it? Yeah. Like, is if you're playing them, the last thing you want to be doing is heading down to...
Yeah, exactly. So if you get them...
Especially this time of year.
Yeah, you might get them in, so we have to play them in the UK somewhere. Yeah. Like, so, you know, all of a sudden that path opens up. And as you said, even getting the day out, you know, in Tottenham Hotspur Stadium for the fans who have been kind of starved of a good...
I don't know, if they get the day out, they need a performance at the very least. I actually don't think that's... Like, they have been long suffering. Like, as far back as I can remember, when they've gotten to the big stage, they've been so badly let down. You know, just even poor performances. Like you think of the Leinster one all the way back, and I just haven't, they haven't seen anything. You know what I mean? That was a pumping. That was a 20-30 pointer in the end. Like you can't do that to your supporters. Big matches, they don't need just a day out. Those supporters need a performance on a big day out. Do you know what I mean?
I'm glad.
A tough year, day out though.
I'm glad.
Like the trip to London, yeah.
I'm glad that both teams are, seem to be going for the Challenge Cup, because I don't think either of them are in a position to turn their nose up at winning a trophy. You know what I mean? Particularly Ulster, like you said. And if they went on to win the Challenge Cup, like it could be a massive turning point.
Well, it's funny, it shows how much the Irish teams value Europe generally. That, like, if that was a team from France or England, 100% they would probably play a second.
We saw that at the weekend with the teams. And the attendance.
And they were, well, Poe and Montpellier were at home as well, and they still both decided that we're going to rest.
Which is very unusual.
Yeah, like usually at home, like they go all out. It's now time for the left wing moment of the week in association with Bank of Ireland. My one is Bordeaux's top penalty try they scored against Saracens. Another pumping addition. 100 points they put on Saracens in two games, which is mad, but it just shows a little bit of kind of intricacy around the line. Like, you know, they shaped the goal with the front row forward, they threw it at the back, and a few lovely handling, a bit of handling later, they were going over in the corner. But it kind of showed to me Noel McNamara and his impact. Obviously, they have great talent in that back line, but moves like that and some of the moves they scored in the game shows that at least he's having an input. He's having, you know, he's his fingerprints on it. And great to see an Irish coach going abroad to a, you know, a tough environment where, you know, in the top 14 and having an impact.
Seems to be a decent enough place for the Irish coaches, in fairness.
Absolutely.
In the game we have the weekend.
Yeah. I actually texted him when after the match when I saw the other try with Penno at the front of it. And I just said, like, what a dream, like, it must be to be, you know, designing attack moves with a guy like that. And he just sex something back. Like, it's pretty simple recipe.
Get him
right?
A ball. Like,
but he is doing a seriously good job. And they're all in for the Champions Cup as well, because Yannick Brew is there, and he obviously comes from Toulouse. So you would not want to be facing Bordeaux in the knockout stages.
Yeah, it's funny.
They don't have to have much of the game to score a try.
If they end up playing Toulouse, like, you know, that looks like the way it's shaping up, you know, because Toulouse have never lost a knockout Champions Cup game to a French team. 13 games, 12
they
wins,
have a
and one draw.
Over.
Yeah,
it's like the La Rochelle thing with Toulouse as well.
Toulouse seemed to have it all. Like 13 knockout games in 27 years.
Yeah, great set.
They drew one and got eliminated on try score, but they've never actually been beaten by a French team in Europe in a knockout game. So, like, I'd love to see that, because Bordeaux on paper you think should match up well with anybody, but does that kind of Toulouse stranglehold? And you're right, La Rochelle have never hit their straps really. Like even last year in the final when, like,
they can't bully Toulouse.
Yeah,
see, they can't bully. Like the and set piece, they don't have that domination.
But Leinster have trounced Toulouse.
No, but that's because Leinster have been. I don't think the others are as much. They don't have as an attacking a set piece kind of. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like La Rochelle can destroy you at set piece. I don't think Toulouse would destroy you at set piece. Whereas you couldn't bully them though. Do you know that kind of way? Because I don't know whether it's the quality or the technique at scrum time or whatever it is. I just don't think they can do that to them. It's a little bit different, I think, than Leinster's for whatever reason.
I don't think it's the mental thing of Toulouse.
Oh, there's a bit of that too. Toulouse 100%. They're the old lady over, aren't they? Like they're like kind of Juventus, I think, aren't they, in Serie A, you know?
Yeah, hopefully we get to this Bordeaux semi final. That'll be a cracking game. Keane, what's your moment of the week?
I went for Jameson Gibson-Park's hat trick, and we've kind of touched on him already, how important he's become to Leinster. Like I said, I was at the Aviva on Saturday night, and just watching him in the flesh, like Luke touched on, when he's given the kind of space and time on the ball, was just exceptional. I think he's one of those guys where you do get a greater appreciation when you're at a match, sitting up high and watching him. His vision is exceptional. I don't think there's a player, even including Anton Dupont, who exploits the space down the short side as well as he does. He is just so, so good at that. And if Anton Dupont wasn't around, we'd probably be saying he was the best scrum half in the world at the moment. So it was an incredible hat trick. 17 minutes as well.
He actually showed up to the Six Nations as well, which should give him a bit of credit. You know, he showed up and he won it. Like, you know, where was Andrew Dupont? Oh, he was in LA. Fair play to him on a junket.
Junket, unbelievable. Yeah, here I am getting stick from all the sevens people. He's very destructive for the opposition, isn't he? Like, if you give him the time and space, quick ruck ball with Leinster and Gibson Park in form.
His battle with his old mate Kerr Barlow will be.
Kerbal is an unbelievable guy.
So good.
Such a good player. My moment of the week is the Conan try. Having had the mistake a couple of minutes before, he got the dot down. He was playing really well. I think what I really liked about it, he looked really quick, didn't he? Yeah. I thought he looked
great.
Pace. Against the Bulls as well, he finished that one well.
There was a lovely break by Baird, obviously. But I just thought, just as the offload's happening, he is a little bit of footwork as well. I just thought, wow, like he looks like he's playing well. So I'm glad we had the conversation about, you know, where he fits in on the weekend. He's been having a brilliant impact off the bench, But I'm a big man for, I like
kind of having him. He's kind of damned if he does, damned if he doesn't, isn't he? Because he's playing so well off the bench that.
And Leinster will need that. I really think they will need that bench impact.
Yeah, they will need that 100%. But whether they get it from him, Doris, Baird, who is like who. Because I think Van der Fleer is going to be in, I think.
Yeah. I just know they won't put Doris on the bench.
I think you're right too. It's whether he goes, I don't think they should put him at six though.
Yeah,
that's one thing.
Conan or Baird, I think, really.
Yeah,
and he's probably because he's doing so well. Like, you mean Leo Cullen might be,
and you could probably switch. You could probably switch Baird into the row if everything's going okay. You know, that kind of way. But I don't know. That's tricky too. Like, it looks like the issue for them with the lineout thing is actually something that we mightn't have talked about enough, because I think what it does is it kind of restricts you. Like, who,
you have that Maloney,
who comes in after Maloney? Like, I mean, it looks like, does Maloney have to do 80? Does he? He might have to. Yeah. I don't know. Look, it's a brilliant roundup. Sorry, I know that moment is probably an unusual enough one, but I just thought I think he's playing really hot at the moment, and I just wonder where they put him. It's a bit of a dilemma, isn't it? So, but can't wait for the action.
It leads us into the end of the show. Predictions for the big one.
Me first for the big one. I'm going La Rochelle by, again, a point or two, something like that. Sure. I just think I like Osborne, but that could be an issue. I think Ryan is the key factor for me. Yeah, I think if they have Ryan, they beat them. If they don't, they're not beating them. So yeah, I think I'm depressed saying that, but I'm hoping. The good thing for me is that I can be I told you so next weekend, or I can be coming in with a Leinster win under in my back pocket. So I don't. That's the best case scenario for me. Yeah.
I think Leinster will win. I do think, you know, even though they lost every game and I was like very confident that they would win the other ones, this time I don't think La Rochelle are playing as well. And I know Leinster haven't been playing great either, but I just think, and I know you disagreed with me, but I do think La Rochelle haven't been close to the heights they hit in those two Leinster games from what I've seen. I've seen them play every Champions Cup game this year and a couple of times in France. I just don't think they're playing as well generally. Yeah. I don't think they'll be as good on Saturday as they were the last two finals. I think Leinster will get closer to their performance, which was close enough to winning both of those games as it was. Like, it's not, sometimes the way, since they've lost all three, it's almost as if they haven't been close to winning them, but they have been close to the last two, clearly. Like,
yeah.
And I think it'll be close though. I think I wouldn't be surprised if La Rochelle did nick it again either. Yeah. But I just think,
actually, it's hard to argue at that point. Like, they haven't been good either. But I my thing is, I don't think Leinster have been that great.
No, they have. I don't think they have. But like, La Rochelle have lost 12 matches this year. And I know the French league is more difficult, but some of those performances and results have been against teams that we would look at and not rate. You know, like, as in.
But playing those teams away from home. So, now, I know they've lost a few at home too, but like, I think that playing away from home in the French league is, it's an animal of a show every week.
Yeah,
it's like going into the South African team.
No, but like, I compare it to, say, Toulouse this season, whose domestic form has been a lot better. Like, I think Toulouse are in a better place at the
moment. Aldridge was away after the World Cup and stuff.
Post World Cup, there's been a lot of, you know, it is a difficult post World Cup. I just don't think they've been as good as they were the last two seasons. So I just don't think they'll be as good on Saturday as they were in the last.
I think Rodgers said as much, hasn't he, as well. So I think, like, it'll be interesting. Real test for him this week. Can he get them back up to that right pitch to beat Leinster?
Yeah. And what you can have the last.
I'm going La Rochelle as well. I saw someone saying the other day that they're a lucky team because, you know, Manny Libbock misses the kick and all those close calls they've had against Leinster. But to me, that is the sign of the ultimate knockout team. Like I said, their record is absolutely phenomenal. I wouldn't read a whole pile into their form this season, because I think they're all about peaking for games this weekend, and they've shown it time and time again. The big challenge is, can Rog get them, whatever team he's going to use down in Cork this week, can they scale Everest again? And I think I agree with Luke. I think James Ryan and Gary Ringrose being out is absolutely massive for Leinster, and I think La Rochelle are just such a well-oiled machine. We know exactly what they're going to bring. It's just so hard to stop it. And yeah, I think that they'll, for the fourth season in a row, knock Leinster out of the Champions Cup.
Oh, that's set up to be an absolute cracker. Thanks to Keane and Luke for joining me on this week's episode of The Left Wing. We'll be back next week to reflect on what is set to be an absolutely cracking game at the Aviva Stadium. In the meantime, you can subscribe to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or listen on independent.ie. So until next time, thanks so much for listening, and goodbye.